Just a little bit about the countryside in Brazil. I have never traveled to that part of the world before, so it was really interesting to see a beautiful country, a really beautiful mix of beaches and mountainsides and cities and country. We were there in this time of year in Brazil, because it's in South America, is their winter. So probably there weren't as many flowering trees and things like that this time of year as there would be in their summer. There's a lot of beautiful scenery from the country to the cities. In the cities, maybe if you've seen pictures of Brazilian cities like Rio de Janeiro, they have favelas, which are in the city. You know, most of the city is kind of in the flat land, and then as you go up the mountainside, there are houses that are built all the way up the mountainside, and a lot of that history, I believe, came from there were slaves in that area, and that was the land that they could get after, you know, after being freed to build homes. And so even in this day, that is where a lot of the poor population lives. But, yeah, the countryside is very beautiful there.
Brazil has lots of beautiful beaches with white sand and clear water. We saw lots of fish, crabs, and sea urchins. The waves were high and fun to play in. The sand was really soft. There were also a lot of things to eat on the beach.
So the Christ, as Aldina was talking about, is a massive statue of Jesus, representing for protection over Rio and Brazil. The stone from the Christ came from Sweden, so it was shipped all the way over to Brazil. And the request to build it was made by some people in Rio, but it was turned down by a princess. And later, there was a group called Catholic Circle of Rio. They had a request to make it. They started a petition, and the petition got through. So that's why it's there.
One of the things you notice when you get to Brazil is that the economy is a lot different than here. One of the things that, especially in Itaboraí, which Alex can correct me on this, but the city was built up with the anticipation of a huge refinery. If you remember a couple years ago, there was an oil crisis and the prices were very high. So this city was built with office buildings, infrastructure, clubs, all those kinds of things. So people moved from all over the countryside of Brazil to Itaboraí with this anticipation of a huge economic boom. Well, partway through that, I'm not sure what the history was, but the government and government officials, there was some corruption and a lot of money was stolen. And so the whole plans for the city where Duarte live, they were scrapped. And so people who had very, very little, who had sold everything to come to this city for the future, were stuck. And so now the city that they live in is, I mean, there's beautiful office buildings that are sitting completely empty. And so I think Emily called it Youngstown or Detroit or something like that. But it's not a healthy economy there. Minimum wage translates to $1.04 an hour. Scott, I don't know if you remember what the price of gas was there, but I think it was, what, $2 a liter? Or gasoline was $5 a liter. Okay. $2 a gallon, or $2 a liter. And so, you know, gasoline doesn't go any further there than it does here. But they've switched over to a lot of propane in their tanks. They can only drive 100 miles before they refill it. Or natural gas, I should say. So the economy isn't great, and here you can't see it, but the price of a burger there isn't that much cheaper than here. It's about $2 for a burger. Here it might be $4 or $5. But if their minimum wage is about a seventh of what our minimum wage is, you can see that a lot of their money goes to food and basic living. Cost of clothing is about the same as here. If you want to buy a pair of Nike shoes, they're $50 there, just like they are here. But for there, it would be 50 hours of minimum wage work. Here, it would be 10 hours of minimum wage work. So the economy isn't great there. Who's going to talk? Food? Okay. One of the things that strikes you, too, is the difference in food. We had a different experience than the Zimmerleys did. We went out to eat quite a bit, and the restaurants there are by the pound or by the kilogram. So you take your plate, sort of like our salad bars here, you fill it up with the food from the buffet, and you put on there, you take it up, and you weigh it. And you pay at the end of the time you're done there, and you have a lot of variety of what you can eat. We went to the grocery store with Leo, and we saw all this beautiful fruit, all these varieties, and we'd pick it up and say, can we have that? He's like, oh, no, that's bad, bad. That's very bad. And we bought a pineapple, and it tasted like good, fresh pineapple to us, and he was saying, oh, it's so bad. It's out of season. I guess it's like eating a mealy apple here in the middle of winter, you know, spring. So the food was different for us. And, of course, the Brazilian steakhouse is a place where they bring in food and cut off pieces of meat for you. And they call that barbecue. So a Brazilian barbecue has nothing to do with sweetness on meat, but has a lot to do with a big variety of meats. I don't know if you want to talk about the typical food that you had.
We didn't eat out a lot, but we had a lot of rice and beans and lettuce salad, and just plain lettuce salad, and that was, the Duartes had said, this is our meal, this is what we eat every day. So there's not a lot of variety from what we saw in their diet, but we liked it. The rice and beans were good.
One thing that we both noticed was a sense of community, and in talking to John and his reflections on being here. For those of you that don't know, John was a 17-year-old boy that came with his parents. And he said that his time in the U.S. was the best time of his life. But one thing that he noted about us was how cold we are and how impersonal. And what he meant by that was, he said, I have a friend, Casey, at school. And he said, I'm so happy to see Casey. I'm like, Casey, hi, I see him walking over there. And Casey goes, hey, John. And in Brazil, it's hugs everywhere. And here, not so much. And so that coldness or that impersonalness, they mentioned that being different. And I think you guys experienced that as well. We also had the opportunity to join them at their church. Their church worship was Sunday evening. That was the biggest participation at that point. Most churches met on Sunday evening. I think I have a... But you can see it's lively worship. It's old, young. Their church has about 200 people in it. This is where Leo and Damaris go. And the children... Their children are in their late teens, early 20s, and they go to a more upbeat, more popular, contemporary, I should say, church. So if you think this congregation is contemporary, I guess it's not even. But and this is all ages that are singing, clapping. One thing that struck me before the service, I saw an older man come in. It's actually the gentleman in the blue there that you can see. before the service started, he was in the back on his knees praying. It just struck me as something that this guy's in there praying for the service that's about to happen. So. Everybody doing a little dance. Carmen can show us how. And just so you know, that is not Brazilian music. They were singing music from Mozambique, where the church was sending a team. So they were singing an African song as part of the commissioning service. Okay. Another thing that struck me was that even in spite of the economic conditions that the local congregation had there, they felt a call to go to Mozambique. And so they had brought together money from other churches and were reaching out to Mozambique where they were taking food, they were taking money to help the poor. And that sort of struck me because Leo, if you remember Leo, said that When he was in Mozambique, he was going to be going to bed early. And the reason he was going to bed early was because he was going to be eating one meal a day. And that was when he wouldn't feel hungry, was when he was sleeping. So we've been getting pictures back from his time in Mozambique and seeing the children coming out for food. But it struck me that, again, in a country where we offered a 5 hei tip to the taxi driver, and the Duarte's daughter said, no, that's too much. 5 hei is $1.25. So that was too excessive of a tip in a country where, again, the income is much lower, and yet they had enough to share with others. Okay. Now we'll talk a little bit about the center, the servo.
Okay, I'll just tell you a little bit of the history of how the center that the Duartes started and continue to work at, how it began. Some of you may have heard this story back when they came or before they came, but I'll just refresh in case you haven't heard it or don't remember. But after Leo and Damaris were married, a couple years after that, they were expecting their first child. And during that time, I think she was a few months pregnant, they were visiting some family members, and some men who were under the influence of drugs broke into the house and held them at gunpoint for about an hour or so. And everybody was okay. They were released at the end. But then as a result of that, a few days later, just because of the emotional trauma, Damaris lost the baby. And so, of course, that was a very traumatic time in their lives. But through that, Leo was given a call to work with people under the influence of drugs or drug-dependent people. I think it took maybe a little more convincing for Damaris to agree with that, but eventually she became on board with that program too. And so they kind of realized, well, we need to learn a little more about this. They tried talking to some people in Brazil and learning more that way, but they decided a good way to learn would be to travel. So they went to Portugal and Spain and spent, I think, about 5 years there. And there they were learning, they were helping work with and volunteering in some places that had like a drug treatment center. And that's where they kind of learned, I think, how it worked and what kind of programs worked with people. And that's where they kind of got their vision with what they wanted to start when they got back to Brazil. Another thing, during that time period over there, Damaris was diagnosed with a medical condition where she was told that she would have to take a medication probably for the rest of her life, that and because of the medication, she wouldn't be able to have children because it would cause severe problems with the baby if she were to get pregnant. So during that time, they kind of, you know, came to the understanding, like, you know, that they probably weren't going to have children, but Damaris also received a word from God during that time that she would become the mother of many. So they weren't really sure, I guess, what that meant at that time. But that was a call or a word that she had from God at that time. So after they returned to Brazil, I think it was like about 5 or 6 years, that's when they really started their work with, you know, working on how they could start a program there working with drug-dependent people. And also during this time, Damaris got the feeling that she had been healed. And so at that time, she went to doctors and had was checked out and was told that, yes, everything was okay. She was healed. She no longer needed to take that medication. And so at that point, they were able to have their own two children. So that was a real blessing from God then, too. So I think it was in 1997, the land was donated where they were able to build their center. The name of the center is called Servhu, which is, it's an acronym, and translated, I believe it is the center, or Evangelical Center for the Recovery of Human Life. So that is, it kind of explains what their purpose is. But so since, I think then they actually opened their center in 1998, so they just had their 20th year anniversary this year. And so I asked Leah when we were there one time, I said, well, you know, what's going to happen, you know, when you retire? Who's going to take over your work there? And he said, well, I'll never retire. He's like, I'll just do this as long as the Lord enables me to. So that just tells you how important the work is to him and also to Damaris now. And I'm not going to tell, I think someone else is going to tell a little more about the center, what they do there. But just as a follow-up to what I said earlier, while Leo and Damaris did have two children of their own, the promise to be a mother of many kind of came fulfilled in through their work in the center, because many, I mean, there's been hundreds of young men come through the center over the decades, and many of them call them her mother. So that is how that word from God came true.
Oh, you pretty well have the history of the center. I'm going to tell you a little bit of our experience of touring and visiting the center. We arrived there. We were introduced to a couple people, and we started walking around, did our leg tour. And first building we went to, the people were there for treatment were building a building, and they, Leo, I believe, said that that's for visitors, like for family and visitors, and then eventually he wants that to be his house. So when Julie said he wants to not retire and be there, it's, yeah, it's 100% true. And then we toured a little more. We seen some chickens in a chicken house. There's 25 chickens. And I don't know if they used all the eggs or they sold. And then if you looked on up the hill farther, you could see they were starting to build, but they had quit. They are trying to build a 500 chicken facility, and their facilities would be just like a fenced in area, not like a chicken coop around here, because you don't need walls and you need a ceiling, but keep the heat off. But so if they could have 500 chickens, Leo feels that they could raise quite a bit of money by selling the eggs to local markets. And so that's one of his drives right now, is to do that. What else? Oh, another thing I thought was interesting was when we were there, it was winter time. All the buildings were wide open. They had doors open and stuff. Well, it was during the day, too. They probably closed them at night. But You know, you walk into their dorms. They had three different section of dorms. I'll let someone else explain that. I think Caden knows that. So they just slept on regular flat dorm beds, and they had a fitness room, which was two exercise bikes and a TV, and I think they had a ping pong table, right? And a pool table, yeah. And then you walk out of that building, and you go back down the hill, and there's this sidewalk that went down to the lunch area, and they had a lot of the residents that had been there. They had built this sidewalk, and it was just beautiful how they laid it, laid the stone. I wish we had a picture of it, but, and I'll let you talk about the.
So a lot of the center was nature, like the steps going down, they had bamboo rails, they had a lot of plants around there, and it was just felt like you were out in the open, just a little place. So there are three different levels there that you can be in for your treatment. First level is like the beginning level. When you get there, it's the first place you sleep. And throughout that time that you are in the first level, yeah, you have a specific room. And it's not that when you change levels, it's not the time that you're there. It's the experience you have and the amount of knowledge you have about not taking drugs and all that. And then the second level, it's just next level up. Just keeps going. So that's like a different room. And the third level is the highest level. So like once you get to the third level, there's like kind of like lockers, cubby type areas that you can put your stuff in. And
We had the privilege of going out, I forget if it was Monday or Tuesday, but we went to the center with Leo for their weekly meeting, and he was talking about the different levels. You start at one level in a group dorm and then move to more privacy, I think, and more privileges. And kind of the same thing when you get to, and hopefully Alex will talk a little bit about this, as you get to the higher levels, then you get more freedom, go off-site, family visits, those kind of things. So when we were there, we got to see this meeting where there was promotion. So guys were moving from one level to the next level. And it was neat to hear them share how God was working in their lives and how they thanked the other guys around them for helping them and for holding them accountable. It was just really moving to see how much that meant to them, and then also to see the progress and kind of the joint celebration that they all had as people were moving up, moving different levels. Here, just a real quick little clip of the main worship area, or the main area. You can see that it's open air, and this was also used for their assembly area. And they would meet on Sunday mornings, while the rest of the population in general in Brazil meets Sunday evenings. But Sunday morning is where the center met. And they had some long-term supporters who have been coming there Sunday mornings for, I don't know, 10, 12 years, that come to support the men that are in the center. The day we were there, Alex and Carmen were being sent to the U.S., so his parents were there, and they shared. So not only is it a treatment center, but it's also a spiritual center. And I had asked what the most common addiction was, and it's in that case, it's alcohol and it's cocaine. They don't have the opioid crisis we do yet, or maybe they won't, but there, again, like I said, was alcohol and cocaine. And that truck there, or van, that's what both of us were hauled around, what we saw Rio and the area, and so it was a good time. At the center, I don't know. Let me just go ahead. They serve cafeteria, or they have a serving line. They have rice and beans most days, and they eat on long tables. And there's a lot of communication going on. Couldn't tell what they were saying, of course. And like Scott mentioned, the chickens and the idea of maybe being sustainable through the chickens. Leo told me that he's not always on site, but if he wants to make sure that the guys are doing a good job of taking care of the chickens, he walks up to the chicken coop. And if the chickens run away, he said the guys aren't doing their job. We walked up there. They didn't run at all. They were right up there. So they weren't afraid of people. And at this point, we'll turn the story over to Alex. And
I just want to share just a little bit as to how we got here. A couple things. Although Brazil is beautiful, there's a lot of danger there. And I think Scott and I talked about it when we were there. We don't understand the danger at all. I mean, people were walking around with their backpacks backwards on them. The kids have a couple of other stories. So if you're interested in hearing about some of the dangers that we heard about, you know, go ahead and talk to them. Kind of how we got to where we are today is before we went over, Katrina's parents, we were visiting with them, and they were telling us about Rebecca's sister was over there. And we were like, oh. And they said, well, she married a Brazilian. And we were like, really? And it was like she went to visit. She found somebody that she connected with Alex. They got married. And we were like, oh, we want to see her. We want to meet her. We don't know Rebecca real well, but we thought, hey, there's somebody we kind of know. So on our way from the airport to the condo, to the beach, we told Leo that we wanted to meet Rebecca's sister, Carmen. And he was like, oh, yeah. And so we were just about there, and we asked him about it again, you know, can we please, you know, kind of meet her? And he was like, oh, she's at the condo already. And we were like, what? She's there? And he was like, oh, yes. We invited them. So we get there, and there was Carmen. So the first day, we got to meet Carmen right away. And they said, oh, well, Alex is working. He won't be here. So we said, okay. And then a couple of hours later, Alex shows up at the door. And we were like, what? And here he had taken, it was either 2 or 3 hour bus ride to come out to the beach where we were. To be with us. So with the Duartes, and we talk about community, like we just kept adding people every day into this little condo. We were just packed in there, but it was so much fun. So that's where we kind of got to know Carmen and Alex better. And then also we learned that they were coming to the States. So we said, oh, well, we definitely want to have you over and want to do some things with you while you're here. So we did that. And then we found out that Alex wanted to give his testimony, and he only knows Portuguese. Well, if you think about how God works, it's just amazing, and sometimes it's funny, and you just, like, I just want to say, really? Like, you knew this was happening. But last spring, Kaylee wanted to play soccer, and we weren't sure about playing with her Smithville group or another group, and she has a friend who was playing in Worcester, a Smithville girl who was playing in Worcester, and we thought, okay, and her mom invited us to play with them, so we thought, okay, we'll try this. It worked out really well. All of the families were from Worcester. They were extremely friendly and nice. And towards the end of the towards the end of the season, I started talking to one of the mothers. And I think Kaylee wants to tell you a little bit about that.
And then when we started to talk to the mother, she said that she was from Brazil. And she said her daughter speaks fluent Portuguese. So we were, like, amazed. We didn't know it at all.
So here Kaylee had been playing soccer with this little girl who was very fluent in Portuguese. And we were just like, no kidding. And so we were like, we're going to Brazil. And so then about a week ago, Alex was going to give his testimony, and I thought, I don't really know this family that well. But I texted the mother and asked her if she knew anybody that would be willing to translate for us. And she connected us with Ed and Liz Roche, who are from Worcester, who we are just meeting for the first time today. So, yes, God works in really awesome ways. So Ed is going to translate for us today and translate the story that Alex is going to share in his testimony of being in the center and how that all came about. So I'll turn it over to you guys. Do you want to use this? I don't know. If he wants to set up the mic, then
you can use that. Okay. Okay.
Bom dia.
Good morning.
Meu nome é Alex. Eu faço parte da equipe do Servo, que é o centro de recuperação, há 1 ano e meio.
I'll be lying in church today because I'm going to be saying in the first person what he is saying. Eu falei que eu vou estar mentindo na igreja hoje, que eu vou estar falando o que você está falando. He said, my name is Alex, and he has been at the center for a year and a half, helping, working there.
O Servo é um centro de recuperação para pessoas dependentes de álcool, droga.
The Servo, the center, is a center for recovery of people with addiction to alcohol or drugs.
E tem capacidade para 30 homens e no momento temos aproximadamente 25 pessoas internadas.
They have the capacity for 30 guys at any given time, and right now they are serving 25 men.
O tratamento é composto por terapia laboral, dinâmicas de grupo, atendimento psicológico.
The treatment combines work therapy, group dynamics, and also psychological support.
E o mais importante, que é o ensino da palavra de Deus.
And the most important, the teaching of the Word of God.
O tratamento é dividido por fases.
The treatment is divided into phases.
E é de caráter voluntário, ou seja, a pessoa tem que querer o tratamento.
It's a volunteer treatment. The person needs to want to be there. Nobody's forcing them to be there.
O tratamento pode chegar a 6 meses.
It can last up to 6 months, the period that they are involved in the treatment.
E durante esse período, residente tem regulamento a seguir.
During that period, the residents, they have a predefined regulation that they have to follow. They have the rules that they have to follow depending on the phase they are.
E tem tarefas diárias para fazer.
Oh, and they have tasks. Every day they have a predefined list of tasks that they are supposed to do. That's part of the work therapy.
Alguns ficam encarregados pela limpeza do local. Outros fazem a comida.
Some work on the cleaning job. Some are in the food service, cooking.
E servimos 4 refeições por dia.
There are 4 meals every day for the residents there.
E
Brazilians like to eat.
E se algum residente trabalha com construção, por exemplo, ajuda na melhoria do local.
Oh, and if any of the residents have experience in construction, masonry, or anything, they will help with the improvements and the development construction of the center.
Hoje eu faço parte da equipe do Servo.
Currently, I am part of the team of Servo, the center.
Mas nem sempre foi assim.
But it has not always been like that for him.
Fui criado em um lar cristão.
He grew up in a Christian home.
Fui batizado.
Baptized.
Mas em 2017 eu tomei a pior decisão da minha vida.
But in 2017 he took the worst decision of his life.
Me afastei da igreja.
He went away from the church, from the family.
E quando fui ver eu já estava bebendo.
And slowly he caught himself drinking,
fumando cigarro,
smoking cigarettes initially.
E tempo depois veio pior, que foi a droga.
And a little later came the worst, the involvement with the drugs.
Foi a pior fase da minha vida.
Worst phase of my life.
Isso durou alguns anos. Isso durou alguns anos.
That phase took him over a year.
Todo o dinheiro praticamente que eu trabalhava, eu usava para consumir bebida e droga.
Basically, all his wages from his work were gone with the alcohol and the drugs.
Eu sofri muito, mas quem mais sofreu foi minha família.
He suffered a lot, but his family suffered most.
E chegou um ponto que eu estava muito mal.
He got to a point that he was very bad. He was in a real bad condition.
Que eu vi que eu já não tinha mais controle da situação.
He had no control of the situation anymore.
E eu resolvi pedir ajuda.
Then he decided to look for help.
E não é fácil pedir ajuda.
And it's not easy to ask for help.
O dependente sempre acha que ele tem sempre o controle da situação.
Yeah, somebody that is dependent on drugs always feels that they have control, they know what they're doing.
E meus pais conheciam a família Duarte.
His parents knew the Duarte's, Pastor Duarte's family.
E me levaram para conhecer o servo.
They took him to see, to visit the servo, the center.
E eu resolvi ficar para me tratar.
And he decided to stay and get the treatment.
Cheguei no servo destruído fisicamente.
He got there, he was destroyed physically.
E moralmente.
And morally.
E a minha primeira, o tratamento é dividido por fase.
The treatment has the different phases, like he said before.
E a primeira fase para mim foi muito difícil.
The first phase was the hardest.
Porque eu tive que ficar 20 dias sem contato nenhum com a família.
He had to be for about 20 days with absolutely no contact with the family or anybody outside.
Na segunda fase, depois desse período,
the second phase after that first one,
eu já podia receber ligação duas vezes na semana.
He could talk on the phone twice a week with the family.
E visita da família aos domingos.
And the family could visit on Sundays.
E chegando na terceira fase,
then when he got to the third phase,
eu já podia ir em casa aos finais de semana.
He could leave the center in the weekends and go visit with his family.
E regressava para o servo na segunda-feira.
And would come back on Monday to be at the center.
E foi assim até o final. Meu tratamento durou 4 meses.
His treatment took 4 months, so that was the sequence to the end.
4 meses interno.
Internally, 4 months, the period that he was internally at the center.
E mais 6 meses externo.
And 6 more months in this semi-internal process.
Onde eu teria que ir pelo menos uma vez por mês ao servo.
Okay, that in that last 6 months he needed to go to the center once a month.
No servo eu me reconciliei com Cristo, com Jesus.
So besides the treatment, when he was at the center, he also reconciled with Christ. He reconnected his life with Jesus.
E foi onde minha história começou a mudar.
That's where his story started to change.
Eu estava praticamente desempregado.
He was unemployed.
Estava sem documento, tinha perdido tudo.
He had lost his documents.
Não tinha nada.
He had nothing.
Só tinha a minha família que sempre orou e nunca desistiu de mim.
He only had his family that was always praying and never gave up on him.
E muitas coisas foram acontecendo no meu processo do tratamento.
And during this treatment process, many things were happening.
Eu consegui reconquistar a confiança da minha família.
He got the trust of his family back.
Hoje eu tenho um trabalho melhor do que eu tinha.
He has a better job now than he had before.
Deus me deu um casamento sólido.
God gave him a wife and a solid marriage.
Tá minha esposa aqui.
His wife is here.
A Carmen.
Carmen.
Hoje eu tenho a minha família.
He has a family today.
E eu tenho certeza que sem Deus eu não conseguiria.
And he's sure that without God he would have not won this battle.
Eu sou um ex-dependente.
He is an ex-dependent on the drugs and alcohol.
Sou fruto do trabalho.
He's a fruit of the work
que o pastor Léo e a Damaris fazem naquele lugar.
That the pastor and the team does at the center there.
O servo foi um recomeço na minha vida.
The servo, the center, was a new beginning for his life.
O servo, ele não tem apoio do governo.
There's no government support for the center.
Ele vive exclusivamente de ofertas e doações.
So it depends 100% of donations and contributions.
Todo mês temos que levantar aproximadamente 20 mil reais.
They need about 20,000 real every month, so about $5,000.
Ou 5 mil dólares. O que não é fácil.
What's not easy for them to raise that amount.
Mas Deus tem nos ajudado em meio às dificuldades.
But God has been helping in the midst of all these difficulties.
O servo não é apenas um centro de recuperação.
The center is not just a recovery center.
O servo é sem dúvida um campo missionário também.
It's a missionary field also.
Onde temos pregado que só Jesus pode libertar.
Where they have been preaching that only Jesus can release the people from those situations.
E se algum dia vocês tiverem a oportunidade de ir ao Brasil,
and if you ever had the chance to go to Brazil,
o servo estará de portas abertas para recebê-los.
The center will have its doors open to receive you.
Que Deus abençoe e obrigado.
God bless you and thank you.
Thank you, Alex, for sharing. We skipped over a story that Caden and Kaylee had about the dangers that one of the people that they met talked about. So please ask them after the service to tell the story there. When we were about to leave, and this is hard, Leo said, you know, that it was very important their time here at the congregation and how much they really appreciated it, and that they could never repay what they had received here from this congregation and the people that taught them. But he said, one thing I want to...
We made a small correction.
Sure.
The beginning of his story was
2007. Okay. Thank you. So Leo was saying, you know, we can never repay you back financially. And he said, when you came down here, we tried to put together a trip that would be very inexpensive, where the food wouldn't cost you much, the places you stayed wouldn't cost you much, to save you money and make it possible. But then he said, we realized that the amount of money we were trying to save you wasn't anything compared to what you had. He said, in many ways, you Americans are rich, but in many ways, you are poor. That we have something that we have to teach you. And I think it is from the hug, the closeness, the community that we experienced after church. Heather commented that as far as vacations, you know, you can go to Disneyland, but when you go to a place where you meet other Christians and relationship and community are formed, That's something very precious. And we have new friends now. And I wonder, you know, looking back at our Mennonite heritage of greeting each other with a holy kiss, if we've lost that greeting of each other, that sense of community that we experienced in Brazil, just physically and spiritually sharing together. So I guess that would be our challenge that we bring back to you is a word from Leo and Damaris, very much of thank you, but also an encouragement to be warmer towards each other, to be more community towards each other and support each other more closely. So thank you, everybody that was part this morning. And let's close with a closing prayer, and we'll have the sending song after. Heavenly Father, I thank you for the opportunity to hear how you've worked in a life and the life of Alex, and to be able to see the many lives that you worked in at the center, and the opportunity to meet Leo and Damaris and John. And God, I just pray that as we go about our daily lives and we think about the ways that we support each other as a congregation and the people that we work with, that you would remind us that you have the power to change lives, you have the power to give hope, and that it's through us that we can reach out those that are hurting. And God, I just pray as we go to the rest of our service today that you'll bless the teaching and the fellowship that goes on. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.